Welcome back to the Success is My Religion podcast. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement once again, this time for the HBCU Royal University Queens Second Edition. We will be interviewing the Queens for their next book that's coming out September 30th. I hope you enjoy these episodes. Next, we are interviewing Taylor Bell. Taylor Bell is a native of Dayton, Ohio, a 2020 graduate of Wilberforce University, the nation's first private HBCU. Taylor served in a plethora of leadership roles, including president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, Beta Chapter, and SGA president. Most notably, Taylor served as the 2017-2018 Miss Wilberforce University. Taylor served with the platform of encouraging leadership, honesty, empowerment, resilience. Taylor's primary focus was to change the culture of a leader through servant leadership and motivate the campus population to be multifaceted achievers. Currently, Taylor works with children and families in social work and is continuing her education to obtain her master's degree. Taylor enjoys giving back to her community by organizing acts of community service in her area. Taylor lives by the quote, "Solid women don't crumble," and hopes to continue to motivate young men and women to reach their goals and full potential. Enjoy this episode with Taylor. Welcome to another episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. My name is Michael Taylor, your host. I am here with Taylor Bell, who wouldn't change her name to Taylor Taylor if she married somebody with less. But we are here. She's the co-author of the HBCU Experience Movement's new book that's coming out September 30th, the Queen's Second Edition. Taylor, welcome. And
thank you.
Yeah,
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got to your HBCU.
Okay, so as you stated, my name is Taylor Bell. I am a recent graduate of Wilberforce University in Ohio, one of only two HBCUs. It's a funny story. I graduated from high school. I went to a small high school in the area of Dayton. I'm born and raised in here. I got a full ride to a PWI, and I was so excited. So I was there. I stayed there for about 2 years, and it was a wonderful experience. But two of my closest friends at the time was transferring to Wilberforce. And I'm like, okay, you know, let me go up there and see what it's about. Because everyone knew about Central. Everyone was talking about Central State. So I got to Wilberforce, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the culture. I loved just talking to people and them being so family-oriented. They didn't know me from Adam and still talked to me and, you know, introduced themselves and made me feel welcome. And I was just, from that moment, like, yeah, I'm a transfer. So I transferred, and the rest was history after that.
And how did you become queen then? if it's history, tell us that history.
So I got there around like the summer of 2016. So I spent about a year trying to prepare because I knew I wanted to be Miss Wu. Like, I seen our Miss Wu and I was like, yeah, I wanna do this. So I was plotting, I call it. Like, I was doing everything I could, volunteer hours, being a part of organizations, you know, just getting my name out there in a really good light and just doing things that interest me and just trying to be as helpful as I could. I ended up running. It was around like April of 2017. And I was so nervous because, you know, I'm a transfer. What does a transfer look like trying to run for Miss Wilberforce? Like, what does that mean, you know? So I wanted to make sure I submerged myself with as much Wilberforce culture as possible. And just trying to make sure, you know, I really fit the part. I can't just go for a position because I want to without understanding everything that encompasses it. So just getting all the information I could and just preparing and trying to put, I had a friend put me through Queen Boot Camp, which was very interesting. Yes, it was.
Talk about that.
So Queen Boot Camp was really, you know, being an HBCU queen, you have to be on like 24/7. Like, you need to be, as soon as you step out that door, you're ready. So I didn't have the, you know, the etiquette, I guess you can say, just yet of what a queen would be. And me becoming queen, and even just like, you know, how I dress, how the shoes that go with what, open-toed or closed-toed, you know, the stance that you're supposed to be in, how you hold your hands, you know, how to properly provide interviews and how to answer questions, media interviews and things like that, which I thought I had down perfect because I'm very personable and good at interviews. No, I had a lot to learn. So that was very interesting, but I was so blessed to have that opportunity because without that, I don't think I would have been prepared for what I was about to, like, you know, encounter. So it was a blessing to be able to go through that. I ran through my pageant, I mean, time and time again during these boot camps and critiquing things and fixing things. And I just couldn't believe that I actually won. So it was definitely a wonderful experience. It was stressful and you feel the pressure, especially as time gets closer. Like, am I even about to do this? But it was amazing. It was absolutely amazing.
Were they previous queens that put you through this boot camp, or?
So no, he was actually, he worked with so many different queens because he was at Central State. So because he was helping them and helped mold them as well, he helped me and he did a wonderful job. I didn't even know that that was coming. And I didn't tell him that I wanted to be Miss Wu. He actually came to me and was like, so I heard that you wanted to run. And I was like, yeah, you know, I was really suspicious because where did you hear that from? But then he offered to help me and I took the help because I needed it terribly.
Did you have to pay for it?
No. He did that out of the kindness of his heart.
What does he do now? Like, does he still do that?
I'm honestly not sure. It's not something that he focuses on. He actually like teaches. So it wasn't something that he focuses on. It was just something he seen, he heard, and decided to help me. I don't know what made the light go off in his mind, but I'm so happy that it did. So happy.
What was your best, I mean, outside of becoming queen, what was your best experience being in HBCU? I work with a lot of students that, you know, they don't really know about HBCUs, and which they should, but they don't necessarily know about them. So kind of give us your experience, your background. You just touched on it a little bit that you transferred from a PWI. What was that like?
The culture was definitely different. At a PWI, it was really a small group of Black students that kind of stuck together and, you know, made sure to look out for each other. And I'm very grateful for them because they did mold my experience. They molded the experience that I had when I was there. I can honestly say, I think my HBCU experience was amazing. I think my favorite by far was opportunities to go to like high school college fairs, going to schools and talking to students about HBCUs. that they didn't know about. You know, like you said, many students aren't aware of HBCUs in their area. And often when schools do like their school fairs, they don't invite HBCUs there. They invite the biggest local schools they have, which normally HBCUs are not a part of that. So, I love the opportunity to go back to my high school, talk about Wilberforce. And Dayton, we had a high school college fair where hundreds of schools attended, and it was nice to be able to go with our school's recruitment staff and talk to high schoolers just about what HBCU experience is like. And then also as Queen at the time, on my experiences because I was from the area. So, you know, they went to schools that were down the street from mine that I'm like, hey, you know, I got the chance to come here. Wilberforce offered them scholarships on the spot. It was just an amazing opportunity to be able to come to. I think as well, I was able to be a part of the UNCF IM tour that was in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I was a panelist there, and it was absolutely amazing to just see like all the girls come up to me and say, hey, can I have your number? Can you be my mentor? Can you do this? Can you do that? And it was like, wow, you know, this is, although you don't think about it in the moment because it's kind of okay, superficial. I have a crown on, I walk around my school, you know, but to be able to do that much outreach and see people truly care about what you're saying and really see the value in your experience is really warming. And it helps it all make sense even through the chaos. So I can say by far the outreach, the mentorship, even the sense of community in the HBCU that I experienced was amazing. Just having alum come to the school and y'all have something in common, and now you're getting a care package, or now you're, you know, getting some form of love because they remembered you from the last time that they were there. I absolutely love that. I loved getting the knowledge and getting more history and even just things that I didn't even know about, you know, finding out that all of the buildings are named after prestigious African Americans or, you know, something of the sort. So, I just think that kind of molded the HBCU experience for me, and I look forward as an alum to do the same thing for a student there.
And because I was a recruiter when I was in college. I only recruited for the college that I went to. People are like, why don't you go to admissions and do admissions after? I'm like, I don't want to travel. I don't want to do none of that stuff. But
I
I mean,
understand. Like, that's so stressful, but recruitment was so fun. That was
right.
so fun. It's a different experience.
Yeah, and I loved it for the school that I recruited for, but me going to another school and actually doing that as my job, I didn't have the same passion talking to students about somebody else's school that I really didn't know about in
Exactly.
depth.
Exactly.
I'm looking at my questions. What do you do now?
So currently, I'm a social worker. I work for the Department of Children's Services here in Dayton. I am a master's student at Case Western Reserve for my master's of social work as well. So I definitely plan to do some outreach in the community and focus on children, predominantly school age children, to give them like a sense of, I guess, a sense of direction. Because I understand how necessary that is in communities like the ones that I grew up in. So I'm really looking forward to doing that.
So you have a passion for the youth or school age students?
Yes, I can't wait. Anything I can do that has to do with kids, I'm like, yep, I'll do it. And it's amazing, mainly because that's where the most attention is needed while we're children, you know. And unfortunately, you can't control the environment you grow up in. So any way that I can be of assistance to a child, I would love to.
Right. Because that, I mean, it is hard. I work in an inner city school, and we have so many programs that are available. Like, and it's in just my department, I work in the College and Career Center. I work in a high school too, so just in my department, it's only three of us that work in that department, and there's 1,200 students. Like, we can't get around to everybody to speak to them and be like, hey, this program might be good for you. You could We can only do so much before it's like, you didn't come see me. So you're not a part of the program, and you're gonna have to wait till next year, which is terrible, but we put information out there. Come on.
Exactly. And it's just so many things that children don't know to ask for. They think it's impossible. They think that the environment that they grow up in is how they're destined to be as they get older. And it's amazing to see their mindsets change. And I think that's so amazing to be a part of. I would love to do what you
I
do.
don't know. I don't know if you really want to do that. But I mean, it's rewarding. I do it because like, I have my own goals. My ultimate goal is to fund and run a life prep program for disadvantaged student athletes. So, like, the reason my podcast is called Success is My Religion is because I study and I do reverse engineering so that I make sure that I become successful, as far as I look at my ultimate goal and my goals that are in the future, and I reverse them and see what I need to do to position myself to achieve that. And like I tell my students all the time, like, I'm only there for, I mean, I'm not only there, but I'm like, I'm giving you some valuable information while I'm here. You know what I mean? Because this is not my final destination. I'm not going to be here years and years to come. You're not even going to be here years to come because you're seniors and stuff. They like, why are you leaving? Why are you leaving? You leaving too? What are you talking about? You ain't even going to know if I'm here or not. You know what I mean? But no, I love working with them, and seeing their minds change with new knowledge. Because, man, I'm talking to students, I'm like, they have a whole bunch of assumptions about a lot of different things, life, and I'm like, well, do you know? And you have one of the greatest resources ever in life at your fingertips. You have the internet and Google. I don't know why you can't look up something and get some kind of idea on what you're speaking about before you be like, oh, this is what it is. Because I've had to sit down with students and be like, do you want to live on your own when you get out of school? Because you're projected to make this amount of money. And how much is that? Like, I went through it all. Like, this is how much an apartment, I had them look it up and everything.
That is a such important thing to do because everyone thinks that living by yourself is so easy until they see how much it costs to live in a broom closet for a month. Like everything
And you ain't even
until
gonna
you
be there because you working.
exactly. So you're only going to be there to sleep when you're paying this much money for a small space somewhere, you know, and everything costs money. Breathing daggone near costs money at this point. So I think that's such an important skill because many kids don't get that. They don't get to see the breakdown, you know?
And I changed this kid's mindset about making money. I was like, here's how much you're gonna make per week, at the salary you're projected to make, in the field that you want to go into, right? And then I was like, this is $1,000 a week. This is kind of like, were you okay, right? That's $52,000 a year, around that. And then if you made $2,000 a week, this is what that looks like. Which one do you want to get to, you know, or which one do you want to do? And then that gets their wheels to turn, and I love that. Like, I'm a strategic person. I think you can get anywhere, and do anything. It may just take a little bit of extra work depending on what your background is. And that's why I think we need to really study where we want to go instead of just letting life happen to us and let it be a guess.
I agree.
I hate guesses.
And nothing is guaranteed. You know, like you said, it's all a guess. So nothing is guaranteed. You never know if something is actually going to happen that way. So why not properly plan? I call it plotting. I say that I plot on things very often. I say that, you know, in order to be successful, you have to plot it on exactly what you need to do or what you want to do, and then plot on what it takes to get there. And I absolutely love like just seeing those things come true or come to fruition after all that hard work. So put instilling that into kids, honestly, I think is an amazing thing because we have to get them out of the thought of like instant gratification and things
Yes.
happening instantly. And
Yes.
you know, you need to make fast money, you need to do this, or this happens in a year. You know, that's not always the case.
It's never the case for long-term success, like lifelong. I don't think a lot of people understand, like, what you have to be successful, and how much you have to know and continue to grow yourself, intentionally and deliberately, to get what you want, you know. And I study like the highly successful people, and they didn't come from all great backgrounds and stuff. Like Elon Musk, he grew up with a abusive father, and he was bullied as a child, and you know, all of these different things. And it was like he didn't grow up just in the perfect situation, you know, but he made himself into something that he wanted to do. Like what he's doing is exactly from his own mindset. And if you look at his career, I know we can look at a lot of different people's career. He just fascinates me because he's doing something that is totally different. Like nobody's done it before that we know of, right? Making humans interstellar dwellers is a goal that nobody's ever done. So if he's reverse engineering that, he's positioning himself for that opportunity when the opportunity comes, because he knows that if he keeps putting in the work, the innovations will come, technology will get better and better and better and better. That once that time and that opportunity comes, he'll be ready to take advantage of that opportunity because he's practiced. He's they have launched what is that rockets and landed them for so many amount of years before we can actually have some people go to Mars and stuff. Like that's the type of things that I try to talk to my students about, and I'm like, let's think on a bigger scale. We can talk money, but even when they talk money, it's I don't want to go into debt. But are you gonna? I need that same energy when you try to go to buy a car and stuff like that. If you
And
don't
not
want
to mention, like,
to, go
people
ahead.
are often told, like, they are told to go against taking a leap of faith. And I think my chapter really talks about
Ooh.
also persevering through the things that you feel like you don't have to make it what you want. Because if it was up to me and I took a chance on absolutely everything I wanted to do, I think I'd be in a completely different situation. But I've allowed myself to be talked out of so many opportunities because of the what ifs that we talked about earlier. You know, what if this doesn't work and I'm sacrificing for all of this? So there's always a what if to anything. But if you have a feeling that you should take a chance on yourself, then take a chance, you know? Even if that means going against the grain, and if you mention Elon Musk, if he didn't take a chance on himself, he would not be where he is now. If he wasn't able to have that confidence in himself and say, you know, I can do this, he's not able to pitch it to other people to make them believe that he can do it either, he would not be where he is right now. And I think that's a very great point for you to bring up just about looking at successful people because, and honestly, like success is not in the time frame that people think it is. You know, it's not an early year, always an early year experience in your 20s or in your 30s. There are some people who don't reach that success until 40 or 50, even 60. You know, it's there's no such thing as being too old to transfer into something else. And looking at successful people will tell you that. So I don't know. That's definitely a great point to bring up as it pertains to children.
And just people in general, I talk to adults and I'm like, don't you know that this person in your industry, I don't even know your industry, but I know this person in your industry, they are, you know, doing this, this, and this, and whatever you're doing ain't close to this, this, and this. And you could probably do this, this, and this because that is a standard, right?
Right.
Success leaves clues. So you might as well do what somebody else is doing that's making them successful, and then add your extra on there because we all are individuals and we all bring something special to the table. But there's some plays that are have already been played for us,
Right.
and we can steal those plays. We can model those plays, and it can shed years off of the timeline for our success. And what you mentioned earlier is that usually people gain success in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. That is totally true because you can gain monetary success early. Like that, it people do that all the time, but the complete success, the all around person, human being, family, you know, giving back to the community, all of those different things. You don't have those selfish needs when you get older. Like you don't
That's
necessarily
very
want
true.
to go out and stuff when you're in your 40s and stuff. Like I don't know. It's I just talk to students all the time. And I don't want to tell people, like I tell the students all the time, go after the money. But make sure that you're cultivating your gifts and you're going after something that you absolutely want because you got so much time in front of you. You don't realize how much life you have left. It doesn't have to come right now. Did
Exactly.
you use your plotting in your college career?
Oh,
Did
yes.
you
Oh,
know you was
yes.
doing that? Because I didn't know I was doing what the reverse engineering when I was younger. I didn't know what it was.
So honestly, yes, I knew. Mainly because I am one of those people that I set goals for myself in every aspect. So school, you know, my personal life, my finances, I just set goals for myself to reach because I never want to get too comfortable with doing okay. And when I transferred to that school, I made a list of everything I wanted to do. And I made sure that I didn't put a time frame on anything because the time doesn't matter. It's about me being able to come. So as the years went on, I was slowly checking things off that list, you know, that I wanted to do and I wanted to do well. And it was a thing of I don't want to just do it to say I did it. I wanted to do it and do something memorable. I want to do something. I want to be the best at it while I can. And I can honestly say that it has done me very well. Just plotting on things that, or that reverse engineering that you're talking about, it helped me like order. You know, I know that I want to reach this goal. How could I do that? Do you think that this is a good idea? And even like you said, researching people who have done it, trying to figure out what those people did, because you can't reinvent the wheel. There's no point of even trying. So, like you said, make the steps that were taken for you already, do those. Knock those out and then add your own twist to it at the end so that it's individualized. And I can say that it has worked very well for me by doing things that way because I have a play-by-play. I have my own rule book. So it's worked very well.
What would you say to students and people that are thinking about going to HBCUs?
I would really say your experience is based upon you and what you make it, and never allow someone else's experience to determine what your experience would be like. Try things, experience things, get to know people. Just really use your environment to its best extent. And do things you don't even think you would do. Just be open-minded to experiencing new things. Be open-minded to new people. Stay true to the values that you have. Never compromise on those. And really just make sure that you're focusing on overall growth. That's it. An HBCU experience is one not like anything I've ever experienced in my entire life. And if it wasn't for that, I don't think I would be as multifaceted as I am now.
I tell people all the time that the biggest thing that I see from people with a that come from HBCUs is they come out with so much confidence that like I didn't have until I grew into the confidence of my accomplishments because I was in so many non people of color spaces that didn't allow me to be the person that I am and to express myself and stuff. So, the confidence y'all come out with is amazing to me. That's one of the key things that I see. I'm like, dude, they got confidence. They be taking
Yes.
risks and stuff.
I had somebody at my job tell me, and I didn't know what it meant because why would you say that? But he said to me, "You walking in here like you own a place." And I was like, "Cause I will." That's the only response I had to that, because why are you saying that to me? But it was just, that is the type of stuff that, on top of, being excellent at what you do, that will make people remember who you are. And it's not even a thing of being overly cocky or overconfident in your ability and your skills, but it's just knowing what you bring to the table. And it's knowing that regardless of wherever you are, whatever you're doing, that you're of value. And people will remember that for sure.
Walking in your purpose.
Yes.
That is one of the keys to life. What do you do outside of work and your volunteer work?
I do a little bit of everything. Between school and working and just trying to make sure that I'm still present, I honestly can't tell you. I mean, I enjoy doing things outside. I enjoy just kind of living in the moment, and taking time for self-care. I absolutely love that. And I actually enjoy reading. Now that I am in school for my master's, there are several books that our professor has kind of brought to us just about development and the adolescent mind. And doing therapy for people actually helps provide a greater sense of self, because you end up using the things that you learn in your personal life. So, I can say that's a lot of time as well. And just really just trying to enjoy the fruits of my labor at this point while plotting on the next steps, and so I don't get too comfortable.
And that's a hard thing to do. Like I COVID and the lockdown and the pandemic and all that stuff made everything slow down and stop, right? And so I was able to, so I teach group fitness classes and I was going hard before the pandemic and it made me stop and think. I'm like, man, am I enjoying life? Am I doing something for myself at the same time as I'm helping all of these different people, but am I helping myself? enjoy while I'm in the process of getting what I want.
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
I had to sit there and evaluate. And like now I found out I don't work that way. Like
Yes.
I can't just live on this leisurely binge, I guess. I gotta be working towards something. If I don't get what I want, that's the only thing that's going to make me really happy is actually achieving my ultimate goal. And my ultimate goal is to fund and run a life prep program for disadvantaged student athletes. So if I don't get that, then I won't be happy. I'm not gonna say that I'll be I will be upset, but like I'll be really disappointed in my whole life if I did
Yes.
all the work and I didn't get what I wanted, how I
Yeah.
wanted.
Yes. And that's something I want to make sure I focus on too. And I often tell people that during school I ran myself ragged to do all of these things and to experience all of these things. And now I really want to sit and enjoy the things that I have gotten the chance to do and commend myself for the hard work, because when you are so focused on the next steps, you don't take time to think about the past and appreciate what you've done. So I try to make sure I give myself time to do that, and it's really made a change in my life, just my outlook on myself, my overall confidence, and my thoughts and abilities to be able to complete anything. So that's definitely a large aspect of that.
Yeah, I definitely see your point, and I have an issue. Like I read a lot too. I read so many books on success and like I do a lot of work with different populations, especially over the last I'm 37, so over the last 19 years, like I've been in the nonprofit world. Like I study nonprofit and recreation administration. And I'm a certified nonprofit professional, so we did a lot of work in the communities and different populations in the community, not just the Black community. So, like over the years, like I've gained a whole bunch of knowledge, and I find that people, like I'm like, people don't either they don't know or they don't respect like the knowledge that I have at such a young age. And it bothers me a lot because I'm like, I got a certain skill set and a certain level of knowledge that is outside of your fathomability, I guess, if that's a word.
I completely understand that.
And I'm just like, you don't think that I know what I know, but I just have to let it go. And that's one of the things I've been working on myself as personal development. I'm like, all I can do is tell people what I know. If they don't believe it, that's on them. But I'm here to help. And I'm here to help everybody that I come into contact with because I'm in contact with so many people in so many different aspects of life that, even my dental hygienist, she was like, so what do you do with a 90-year-old? Because I'm a life coach too. So she was like, what do you do with a 90-year-old that, doesn't really want to do much? And she used to read all the time, but the pandemic and everything, she don't do anything now. And I was like, you gotta, it's they at the older we get, we still have to learn something new. And learning something new will bring you back to that childlike mentality, and that will keep our brains and our bodies youthful, not young, but youthful, and just find something that lady wants to learn, and she will be okay. And you can tell by the people that live long lives, they have habits that they've been doing for years. Every time you see one of those, She's 102 years old. She's like, yeah, I go walking, or I do this, or I crochet or something. I've been crocheting for 30 years and stuff. Like, they have habits
Yes.
that keep their mind learning and learning something new. And no matter what their diets are, whatever, that's a constant theme, is that they are doing something that is teaching them something, and it's repetitive. And I even have students that don't even work out. Like, one of my students was like, I haven't ran around the track. Like, the last time I ran around the track or did any kind of workout was like a year and a half ago, and she's a senior. And I was like, do you know the like, that's a long life of not
Very.
doing a thing physically, and you think your body is going to. I don't know. That just baffles me. Like, you got to do something to keep your body going, moving, strength, the strength and stuff. Like, you even exercise gives you extra mental abilities, like remembering things and all that stuff. So it's crazy what people don't do in their spare time. And I understand being a
Exactly.
student, you're busy, but not that busy. You ain't that busy.
It's all about as well, like finding that thing that you really want to do or be a part of, you know? And if you don't have something that piques your interest or it just wows you, it is so hard to do it. Like reading, I didn't pick up a book since what, The Hunger Games, unless I had to. You know, like that was something I truly enjoyed. I enjoyed reading the series. I enjoyed watching the movies. So I knew that at that point, if I wanted to continue reading and put my phone down and leave social media alone or leave, you know, things alone that just weren't really productive, there was just something to do, that I would have to do something that really interests me. And that's how I ended up, you know, picking up that hobby. So it was just. It, like you said, it's about making sure that you're always learning, making sure that it's something that you truly enjoy. And you're not just doing it because you feel like you should, because that becomes a job, it's no longer fun. Once something becomes like, oh, you're being told to do this, it's not fun anymore. So, you know, just make sure that your mind is always developing. I think that's good. Like, that's a nice piece of advice to give anybody.
So, can you give us another snippet of what your chapters talks about in the upcoming book, and leave us with some words of wisdom to end the podcast?
So, just a quick snippet of my chapter. I think it really envisions kind of what the process of trusting yourself is like, and also believing in yourself and your abilities. I think that it also talks about as well just being grateful for where you are and what you have, because someone will always have more, someone will always be able to do more and look better. But that has nothing to do with you and where you are. And it doesn't make your experience any less, or you shouldn't experience anything less because someone else has greater. And that leads me to my words of wisdom to end the podcast. Just really try to be present for everything in your life. You know, it can be greater, but it could always be worse. And make sure that out of everything that you are taking the time to enjoy where you are, because you are not in the same place that you were last year. And that is something to be happy, that's something to be grateful for, and it's something to commend yourself for. Every day is a journey, every day is another step towards what you're working on. Don't give up on yourself. And even if others don't believe in you, you need to believe in you.
Well, thank you for those great words of wisdom. Please, everybody, go get the book September 30th. It'll be out on Amazon. I'll send the link and all my social media. Taylor Bell, not Taylor Taylor, but I appreciate you taking out the time to come on my podcast and support give your snippet of your book or your chapter in the new book coming out. We should I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. And I really enjoyed being here and just being able to talk about things that I enjoy and that matter to me. So thank you for having me once again.
All right, I'll let you know when the podcast drops here in a couple of days. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. I hope it's sunny and warm where you are.
Nowhere near,
Yeah.
but I appreciate the thought, however.
All right. Well, have a good day, and I will talk to you soon.
You as well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. Go get the book. We are partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement for the HBCU Royal University Queen's Second Edition. It's coming out September 30th. Go get it.